Hello, podcast listeners. Thank you for tuning into Growcast today. Jordan River here. I have an incredible episode for you today. We have Kevin from the Black Dog LED team, and he is here to talk about manufacturing LEDs and how they are built and how the technology has developed. This is an incredibly enlightening episode. Pardon the pun there. And I know you're going to love it. Seriously, one of the best ones I've done in a while, so set your hopes high today. Before we jump in, though, let's give a little love to today's sponsor, Rooted Life CBD, everybody. Just go to rootedlife.com, rootedlyfe.com. Promo code GROWCAST gets you 10% off, and members of mygrowpass.com, our membership program, get 20% off their CBD. Are you confused about how to use CBD and overwhelmed by the amount of product choices that are out there? Of course we are. Well, Rooted Life is here to help. Their mission is to simplify your CBD experience. Why turn to Dr. Google for information when their team of cannabis specializing advisory doctors oversee their vast educational program? Just go to rootedlife.com, L-Y-F-E.com. They offer high-quality, third-party lab-tested products that have minimal ingredients, as any wellness supplement should. So, don't wait any longer. Use promo code GROWCAST for 10% off at rootedlife.com, rootedlyfe.com. And when you're ready to save 20% on your CBD, join mygrowpass.com, everybody. Okay, let's jump right in with Kevin. This is a great episode, so let's do it, everybody. Best of luck in your grows. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GROWCAST. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, please tell a friend about GrowCast, tell a grower. Make sure you're subscribed. Give us a rating and review. We always appreciate that. Check out the Homegrown Helpers, Rob Smith's show, our partner show, Loving That Podcast, and my new show, the Coffee, Health, and Science Podcast. I'm interviewing some really cool Harvard doctors over there about coffee. It's lots of fun, man. Come check it out. Let's see, what do we have for today's episode? Oh, super excited for today's episode. That's right. I'm doing GrowCasts today, and I've had a couple doozies, and I think this is going to be another one. We have Kevin from Black Dog LEDs on the line to talk about basically LED light manufacturing and engineering. So I'm super excited. How are you doing today, Kevin?
Just fine. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well. I'm excited to speak with you, man, because, you know, we spoke with Noah Miller, and it was just such a great interview, and I love sharing that interview. And he said that I should talk to you, so I'm excited. First, for the audience, could you give a brief background on yourself and how you ended up in the LED engineering world?
Yeah, I never expected to end up here at all. Actually went to school for computer science, for computer programming, and did that for quite a few decades. Very much enjoy that, but I've always had two main interests in life, one being computers and the other being plants. And so I've always just had as a hobby all of my plant stuff, because it was apparent when I went to school that, you know, one career path clearly had an easy way to make a lot of money and good career path in computers, and never expected my plant stuff to be anything more than a hobby. But I'm not your normal cannabis grower. I'm unusual in that from a very young age, I've been growing plants indoors under artificial light, and it's been a whole bunch of different kinds of plants. I've probably grown several thousand different kinds of plants indoors under artificial light at this point. And I've gravitated towards, over the past couple of decades, towards the ones that are, let's say, more challenging to grow under artificial light. Things like mango trees.
Tropical plants, 100%.
Not just tropical plants, but trees.
Okay.
It's somewhat challenging to grow trees with artificial light in general, and trying to do that in your basement in Colorado where you've got a 7-foot height limit creates other difficulties as well.
Oh,
so
I love it.
I was able to play around with pretty much every lighting technology that is available on the market that's commercially available. So I've played with plasma, I've played with, of course, compact fluorescent and fluorescent. They didn't even have compact fluorescent back when I got started. And of course, high pressure sodium and metal halide and ceramic metal halide and LEDs. And basically, if a new light came out on the market or a new technology came out, I would give it a try and see how it worked with several hundred different kinds of plants at one time. And started playing with LEDs about 10 years ago, was very disappointed until I tried a Black Dog LED. And within 4 months, I had thrown out all my other lights, swapped over to nothing but Black Dog LEDs. And 2 months later, I quit my day job and joined Black Dog LED.
That's insane, man. That's really, really great. That's super serendipitous, it seems to me.
Well, when you see something work better than everything else you've been trying for 30 years, it catches your attention. And I see that there's a lot of potential here for revolutionizing artificial lighting for plants.
That's really cool, man. And listen, we like talking to you guys because you're striving to create the best products. There's lots of different options. There's lots of different price points. We're not, Growcast isn't affiliated with Black Dog in any way, but you guys are out there, you're educating, you're doing these tests, you're striving to optimize. And that's why, you know, we love to give you a platform to speak, man. So I'm excited to talk to you specifically though. Let's just jump right into engineering, if you don't mind. Let's talk about how LED fixtures are designed, how they're manufactured, just anything that you think is interesting for us, the growers. I'm fascinated in how the diodes and microchips work. What does the process look like?
Yeah, so at the most basic level, LEDs are a piece of silicon, just like a computer chip or a computer wafer is made out of. But they are treated differently during the manufacturing process. So instead of trying to create logic gates, they're actually just taking a silicon crystal and they are deliberately, quote unquote, ruining it, or what they call doping it, with imperfections in the crystal.
Oh, wow.
And it turns out, and this is not exactly how it works, but the analogy is close enough. They deliberately embed occasional atoms of different materials in a perfect silicon crystal, and that embedding actually creates little holes in the crystal. And those little holes are so small, they actually correspond to the wavelengths of visible light, or whatever wavelength that the LED is going to give off. So by running electricity through, you're exciting these electrons that are sitting on the edges of these holes, and they can emit a photon. And the size of the hole actually dictates the wavelength of the photon, or the color of light that's actually being emitted. So it gets much more complicated than that, but that's basically what it comes down to, is you're creating millions of little tiny holes in the surface of a piece of silicon, and when you give it electricity, those holes are emitting photons of a particular wavelength.
Oh my God. So that's super, super fascinating, and it already begs a lot of questions. So I imagine there's a million different combinations and a million different ways you can create. Like if that's how you're creating these spectrums, it sounds like that there's a lot of possibilities with that, right?
There are, but not all of them work out as well as
a select few.
Everything else does.
So, yeah, totally.
Yeah, I mean, there are some LEDs that are very tricky to make. For example, it wasn't until 2002 that they figured out how to make a stable blue LED that was actually somewhat energy efficient. Because, yes, other people have made blue LEDs before. They just took ridiculous amounts of electricity for the amount of light they put off, or they were unstable. They would only last a few minutes or hours, and no one's going to pay for that. So there are very specific areas in LED research where they're going after specific wavelengths. Blue is one of the ones that they were most interested in going after, because we have had for a very long time now technology called phosphors, which were used in the old style cathode ray tube TV screens. They are used in compact fluorescent lights. We've been playing around with phosphors for a very long time. And the way phosphors work is you excite them with a high energy photon or bombard them with electrons, and they steal some energy from it and re-release it as a photon of a longer wavelength, a lower energy. So if you bombard phosphor with blue light, it can spread that out and essentially steal energy from it to release a green or a yellow or an orange or a red photon. But you can't ever make it go the other way. You can't bombard a phosphor with red light and have it add energy to the photon to make blue light. So the holy grail of LEDs for replacing lighting for human purposes was the blue LED, because it's the shortest wavelength. It's the most energetic form of light that we as humans can see. So if you can create a blue LED, you can then put a phosphor on top of it to make it create the full spectrum of light that humans can see, and make it appear perfect and white to the human eye. And so that's what they finally managed to do in 2002. And it wasn't until about 2010 that that started becoming practical and affordable. And that's when you started seeing the LED light bulbs showing up in stores.
Yeah, that's when they flooded Home Depot. And now that's all you, half the aisle is LEDs now.
Exactly. And then because blue LEDs were the holy grail of human lighting, human purposed lighting, most of the research into LEDs and making them better and making them more efficient over the past 10, 15 years has been in making blue LEDs more efficient. So it turns out you can create the right size holes to make red light in an LED, and it's even more efficient than creating blue light, because red light, having less energy in it, takes less energy to create. So you can get higher efficiencies with red light, but if you want to create a single bulb that you buy at Home Depot, blue is really the important starting point. But that's when you're only considering putting out enough light for a human to read by. And it turns out our eyes are really good at seeing in low light levels. So, and we're actually really bad at discerning between different intensities of light. Plants, on the other hand,
right,
are
whole different species.
Very,
well, I was
very
gonna
light
say whole different species. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I see what you're saying there.
So where white LEDs or these phosphor-coated white LEDs are great for human use, for plants, they are not the most efficient way of giving them all the different colors of light that the plants really need. And plants are specifically sensitive to red and blue light. That's where chlorophyll actually absorbs light. It can't absorb yellow or green light directly. Now, plants have figured out ways along the millions of years they've been evolving to be able to make use of yellow and green light, but they most efficiently make use of red and blue light, which is exactly opposite of our eyes. Our eyes most efficiently make use of yellow and green light, and that's not a coincidence. Our eyes evolved to see the colors of light that plants mostly reflect, because that's how we are able to better determine the difference between the jungle and ripe fruit that's hanging up there, or the tiger that's hanging there to eat us. So our eyes evolved to see the colors of lights preferentially that plants don't use as much.
Yeah, man, that's fascinating stuff. Geez, so eye-opening when it comes to the manufacturing part, though. And it makes sense that this is such a long-standing, there's so much potential here for the future. You know what I mean? I want to touch on why LEDs have continually gotten more powerful, you know, putting out more light, drawing less energy, costing less for the fixtures. What are these technical, you know, these technological developments that are occurring that are allowing this to happen? It's kind of like how, what's the one law? There's a law that applies to computers. Every 10 years, they get half the size and twice as powerful. Exactly. Yeah. So is that kind of similar with LEDs?
LEDs have been following a similar curve to that for a long time now. It's unclear. In fact, it's actually pretty clear that that's going to have to stop here soon, but I'll get into that in a minute. So there are a whole bunch of different ways they have figured out how to make LEDs better. One is when you dope or add these other imperfections into a silicon chip, getting those holes evenly spaced and all the proper size so that they're all generating light is one of the bigger tricks that they've been using to make the LEDs more efficient. So they have been working on the perfect mechanisms for doping to make sure that everything is evenly spread across that surface and to make everything as perfect as possible there. There's another problem, which is silicon chips are not exactly transparent. They tend to absorb most of the light that hits them and block it. So even though they're generating light inside that chip, there are tricks that they have come up with, such as ways of faceting the chips. They literally can carve them up like a diamond to extract more light from the chip. It's being generated in there, but if you can't get it out, then you need to do something to increase that.
That's crazy.
In addition, enemy of LEDs is heat. As these chips get hot, it has a tendency to partly melt the chip and fix that little hole that you put in there, and it just heals itself up, and that hole is no longer generating light anymore for you. It's still taking just as much electricity, it's just not generating as much light. So unlike, for example, HID bulbs, where they actually get more efficient the warmer you run them, with LEDs, it's exactly the opposite. The cooler you run them and the cooler you keep them, the more efficient they get and the longer they will last. So one of the big things that they've been working on as well is extracting heat more efficiently from the LEDs so that they can continue running at peak efficiency and running for longer.
That makes perfect sense. Much like, you know, your MacBook computer, heat really is the enemy when it comes to the longevity of that motherboard in there.
Yep. Yep. And LEDs have a lot of the same issues there. They have issues at a different level because it, with the motherboard heating up and cooling down, it's literally putting stress as things expand and contract. And LEDs have that issue as well. But then they also have a different issue that the longer you run that chip at a particular heat level, the more likely it is to fail, the warmer it gets.
Mm-hmm. Man, this is, I'm so stoked on this episode, man. I gotta say, this is super enlightening. You mentioned a eventual stop to this constant progression here, you know, and I want to talk about, you know, comparatively to HID, but tell me, what does LED tech look like in 10, 20, 30 years? You mentioned a possible stop.
So not necessarily a hard stop, but the latest generation of LEDs is actually, in many cases, for many colors, over 50% efficient. That means that 50% of the total electrical power you're putting into the LED is coming out in the form of energy, in the form of light. And so when you're over 50% efficient, you can't ever double that again. You can't get it more efficient. There's no way, unless you figure out how to make a perpetual motion machine, there is no way that you can double the efficiency again.
I see what you're saying.
We're already at that point they can't double the efficiency. They can make incremental changes, and I'm sure they will, incremental improvements, but it's not going to double ever again, at least for the red LEDs.
That's so cool.
The LEDs are getting close.
That's really cool, man. So the efficiency is just by nature that you're getting close to the 100% mark. There's less room for improvement all the time. I imagine that they're still trying to dial in spectrums constantly, though, right? Is there any end in sight to manipulating and optimizing spectrums themselves that come off of LEDs?
So they're always working on different materials for the silicon chips itself to get different spectrums out and improve what efficiencies they have at that spectrum. So for example, right now they can make LEDs out of diamond that put out UVC light.
Whoa.
UVC light is very useful in certain applications, not as office lighting, but as sterilizing radiation. It can be used in air filters or in water filters to kill everything that's going through there. And if they can make really efficient UVC LEDs, then you can imagine having some sort of, you know, pedal powered or even crank powered water sterilizer that you can deploy around the world to help get rid of diseases around the world.
Wow.
So there's a huge, huge goal there for improving certain types of LEDs. In terms of what plants actually want, they have already figured out how to make all of the different LEDs that we would want for plant spectrums. It's just a matter of getting them more and more efficient over time. But we already have access to all of the different color LEDs we would want. Some of them are just more efficient than others at this point. And for some colors, for example, with green, there are green LEDs that have holes of just the right size to make just green light, but they are not as efficient as actually coating a blue LED with a phosphor to give you green light instead. So we have to use a combination of different technologies to get the exact spectrum we want. But unlike HID lights, where you're pretty much stuck with whatever spectrum that mix of hot gases gives you, and you can tweak it a little bit here and there, but you can't fundamentally change it. With LEDs, we can create any spectrum we want. And that is really the ultimate power of LEDs.
Oh, it's so
we can
cool.
create the perfect spectrum for humans. We can create the perfect spectrum for sterilizing your water. We can create the perfect spectrum for growing your plants.
Okay, before we jump back in with Kevin, let's give a little love to our sponsor today, Fish Shit, everybody, from Fish Head Farms. Love these guys. Just go to fishheadfarms.com. Promo code GROWCAST gets you 10% off. And members of mygrowcast.com get 25% off their fish shit. Guys, if you haven't heard of Fish Shit, it is an awesome product. It's a full spectrum microbial product. It is truly an ecosystem in a bottle. It can be used from seedling all the way through flush, and their ecosystem of microbes work hard to make nutrients more bioavailable for your plant. It promotes heavy sustainable growth in veg. It works as a transplant aid to reduce shock. Fish shit can be used in flour to help bud development and terpene production, aroma and taste. Fish shit is even a flushing agent because it breaks down those salts and improves your final product's flavor. So if you haven't tried fish shit, you got to try it now. Fishheadfarms.com. You've heard the episodes with Stephen Reisner where he's explaining that the more diverse inputs you get when it comes to these microbiological stimulants, stimulating your plant's immune system, that's what's going on there. And that's when you get all those expressions you want, like the terpenes and the flavor and even the color. So go and get it, guys. Fish shit from fishheadfarms.com. Promo code GROWCAST for 10% off. And GrowPass members save 25% at mygrowpass.com. All right, everyone, let's jump back into the show. Do you see it like analog versus digital, HID versus LED?
It is a jump of that sort of magnitude, yes. And just like analog to digital, there are some definitely some growing pains and some holdouts out there.
Well, let me ask you, we're talking about HID lighting. What do you think about the HID spectrums that are being sold on the grow market? It's really interesting what's taken place. And you also touched on plasma. I want to throw you a two-parter here. What happened to plasma? That came and went. Talk to me about your thoughts on like HPS, CMH, and then plasma and all these other types of lighting.
So the funny thing is, I mean, plasma is not new. It made a brief resurgence about 10 years ago, I would say, in the cannabis lighting market. I actually played with it back in the late 90s. Ceramic metal halide is not new. I actually found ceramic metal halide and thought it was the best thing since sliced bread in 2002. So ceramic metal halide they figured out how to run the electric arc in the tube at a higher pressure so they could get higher temperatures, which gives them more options in terms of getting out a better spectrum from the light. And ceramic metal halide is a vast improvement over metal halide and high-pressure sodium in terms of the actual spectrum it puts out for growing plants. Mm-hmm. One of the best things about ceramic metal halide is that it actually has sufficient amounts of blue and ultraviolet light that actually stimulate the plants to do important things, as well as it has decent amounts of red. Now, unfortunately, it's a little bit deficient in red in terms of the actual spectrum we prefer to see for plant growth. Which is why you see a lot of these ceramic metal halide fixtures that have red LEDs around the outside to try and make up for that lack of red in the spectrum. But ceramic metal halide is still much better, in my opinion. It grew everything better than high-pressure sodium or metal halide, or even a combination of high-pressure sodium and metal halide spectrums. I had much better luck with ceramic metal halide because it has a much more balanced spectrum. It has plenty of blue in it. And it has ultraviolet light, which people don't think that plants use ultraviolet light for photosynthesis. And the truth is, for the most part, they're not using it for photosynthesis. But it does trigger other important effects in plants. And there's several different ones. One is the plants try to protect themselves from ultraviolet light by creating their own natural sunscreens, just like our skin tries to protect itself from ultraviolet light by creating melanin to give us a tan and protect us. Plants create various different compounds, and different plants do different things, but most of the plants will create things like anthocyanins and terpenes and flavonoids, which are natural sunscreens. And it turns out that THC and CBD, as well as trichomes themselves, are also forms of natural sunscreens.
Sure.
So if you expose a cannabis plant to ultraviolet light, it gets more potent and creates more trichomes for you.
100%. And that's all I hear, you know, when I talk to CMH growers is it seems to get a more diverse and robust terpene profile. And it just seems to have more qualitative oriented effects, if you will. But I still hear, maybe you can comment on this, and maybe this is the red spectrum, a direct correlation, I'm not sure. I still hear that the way HPSs grow cannabis is just, the yield is just there. It's just maybe a little bit bigger. The way the buds stack is a little bit different is what I hear. I'm not sure if you're in the know on that.
So there, a long time ago, back when there was really only two choices, metal halide or high pressure sodium, I should say three choices, compact fluorescent. People figured out a long time ago that fluorescent bulbs just aren't intense enough to really flower stuff very well. Mm-hmm. So back when there was a choice between metal halide and high pressure sodium, people discovered that, hey, when we veg stuff, it just doesn't look very good under high pressure sodium. So right. Metal halide works a lot better for vegging. And they saw the high pressure sodium, they got double the yield. So they assumed that, okay, the metal halide looks blue and the high pressure sodium looks red. That means plants need blue light for veg and they need red light for flower. Unfortunately, that's not the correct conclusion to draw. It turns out that high pressure sodium bulbs are about twice as efficient as metal halide. They put out twice as many photons per watt.
Oh,
you're
okay.
Simply getting twice as much light.
Okay. That makes sense.
And the reason why they don't work well for veg is because a long time ago, plants evolved a very clever, simple mechanism for determining their place in the forest. Basically, they look at how much light they're seeing that's blue versus how much light they're seeing that's red, and they can figure out from that whether or not they're being shaded out by something that's growing up above them. And if they're being shaded out by a plant that's growing up above them, then they try and stretch their stem so they can outgrow it and get on top of it and get their share of the sunlight.
Right.
So high-pressure sodium has almost no blue light whatsoever in it. That makes the plant think, hey, I'm not seeing any blue sky at all. So no matter how bright, how intense the light is, you automatically trigger this hormonal response in the plant saying, hey, I'm not seeing blue sky. I'm going to stretch my stems and try and outgrow something that's up above me. Doesn't matter how intense the light is, it will cause the stems to stretch. That's why it doesn't work well for veg. You end up with floppy, leggy plants that just don't do very well.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah.
In flower, they only stretch for the first 3 weeks of flower, and then they stop growing their stems. So you can get away with that in high-pressure sodium, where the plants, as long as they're not growing stems anymore, they're going to yield twice as much if you give them twice as many photons.
That's such a good point. So plants do need blue spectrum in veg, but in flower, it's not the need for the red spectrum, it's the need for more light.
Exactly. And in fact, if you give them appropriate ratios of red and blue in both veg and flower, you end up with a much higher quality product as well as a higher yield. Because anytime you change the color of light a plant sees, it goes into shock. It's kind of like when you're in a room full of high pressure sodium lights and you walk out of that room, your eyes go into shock for a few seconds and you can't see colors properly until your eyes adjust. Well, plants are the same thing, but they're slower at it. They tend to stall out for 3 to 5 days when you change the color of light they're seeing to get their leaves to be more efficient. So by simply giving them the correct spectrum all the time, rather than changing it between veg and flower, we actually see 3 to 5 days earlier harvest as well as a bigger harvest because the plant's not going into shock for those 3 to 5 days.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, so enlightening. I'd imagine the LED has a lot of versatility within the units themselves, because I've always thought, what about an LED that can change spectrums depending on where you're at in the cycle? Maybe you could even dial it in down to like the week or the day.
Yep. So we have done a lot of experimentation with that, and you can make plants do all sorts of different things with different ratios of colors. I went into the red-blue one as far as internodal spacing or stem elongation. There's also control of leaf size as well as apical dominance, and those are both controlled by both the ratio of red to blue as well as red to far red light. Mm. And with leaf size, you might think that you want the biggest leaves you possibly can, but if you think about it, the bigger the leaves are, the more they're shading out the leaves that are beneath them in the canopy. And that means that you end up with a really healthy looking very top of your canopy, but nothing underneath it can get any light. And that's when you end up with the airy, larfy buds that everyone has to end up throwing out or turning into processing. Mm-hmm. If you keep the leaves across the board smaller, then you actually increase canopy penetration and can get more light down to those lower buds and increase the quality of those buds and ultimately increase your yield per square foot.
Interesting.
With apical dominance is another thing in plants where If you just leave a Christmas tree or a cannabis plant to its own devices to grow, it's naturally going to form a Christmas tree shape with mm-hmm. one central leader and then a whole bunch of other branches that aren't, it forms a pure middle shape mm-hmm. Because that central leader is actually putting out a hormone called auxin, which is heavier than water. So it sinks in the plant. Mm-hmm. And that hormone is actually suppressing the growth of all of those side branches. So that they don't try and compete with the leader. And that's so that when it's out in nature, it can grow tall and try and get above anything else that's competing with it in the same grassland or the same forest. And so plants develop this apical dominance to allow them to compete better with other plants. In terms of getting the most yield out of your cannabis grow, though, if you allow your plants to have that one dominant apex, that one central growth, then that thing may be in the ideal sweet spot for your lighting, but all of the side branches that are much further down are not, and they're not going to produce the same quality, they're not going to produce the same yield. So our goal is actually to destroy apical dominance as much as we can and mm-hmm. force the plant to stay short, bushy, and have a flat.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm totally with you. So how does that work with light spectrum?
So that's the ratio of red to blue light, as well as the ratio of red to far red light controls apical dominance.
Is it proprietary? Is that why you're not giving me the ratio? No, I'm just wondering, like, what you mentioned the blue sky earlier, which made a lot of sense. And I think that analogy really uh-huh. worked well. I'm just wondering what spectrums encourage bushiness.
So it's not just, the reason I can't give you an answer uh-huh. for that is I can't just say, oh, well, you need 660 nanometer red light. That's not it. You need a specific ratio of uh-huh. 660 nanometer light to 630 nanometer light and 600 to 660 nanometer light to, you know, blue spectrum, 450 or 420 nanometer light.
Wow.
So it's tricky, and there is
a balanced diet.
One...
It's a balanced diet, is yeah. what you're saying.
Exactly. So we used to sell adjustable spectrum lights here at Black Dog, and it's fun. It's fun to play with those knobs, and it's fun to see what the plants do in response. But after doing enough testing, we finally determined the answer was, if we play with the knobs, any time we played with the knobs and changed the spectrum, any time, the ultimate end result was we got a lower yield at the mm-hmm. end of the day. Mm-hmm. If we keep the spectrum that we've got, that we've developed, that has the right ratios to help destroy apical dominance, it helps keep internodal spacing short, and it helps keep leaf sizes small, then we give it the same spectrum from clone, veg, flower, all the way through, we end up with the best yields that way.
Mm-hmm. Man, I'm absolutely with you. I wonder, though, do certain genetics tend to lean towards different spectrums, or is it pretty much ubiquitous across the board?
Within cannabis, it's our experience that there is not much in the way of variability between the different genetics as far as what spectrum
that
they
doesn't,
want.
That doesn't surprise me.
We do see some difference in the intensity of light that they want. A lot of strains that we've tested that have cookies in the background seem to like lower light levels. Not all of them, but a lot of the cookies-based strains seem to like lower light levels. Yeah, but there's a lot of people out there that think that different strains should want different spectrums. In reality, cannabis is all so closely related that the basic plant itself is not going to, I don't think they're ever going to find a perfect spectrum for a particular strain where a different spectrum works better for a different strain.
Interesting.
And it's not so much strain specific or even plant specific, comparing cannabis to a mango tree, for example, as much as what do you want the plant to maximize? So, for example, I told you our spectrum is designed to minimize leaf size. That means if you're growing lettuce with it, you're going to get small leaf lettuce, which is probably not what you want. You want big leaf lettuce. So our spectrum is perfectly wrong for that. Our spectrum is also designed to minimize internodal spacing or stem length. If you're growing bamboo or rhubarb or celery, where what you really want it for is its stem, then our spectrum is perfectly wrong for that. However, if you're growing something for its fruit or its flowers, our spectrum is perfect for that. And that's where, you know, because I'm a crazy nut growing tropical fruit trees in my basement, I'm doing it for the purpose of their flowers and their fruit, not their leaves. And I don't want them to be big and tall. In fact, I want to keep them short. And that's what got me so interested in Black Dog LED, is this spectrum maximizes flower and fruit production while minimizing everything else.
Mm-hmm. Man, I'm right there with you. This is all so fascinating. Talk to me about what else excites you. Talk to me about the future. What's coming down the pipe for Black Dog, or what you're working on, or whatever.
Well, I mean, LEDs may not be doubling in efficiency anymore every year, but they do keep increasing in efficiency, and new technologies keep coming out. And I mean, one of the changes we're probably going to be making in our next version of light is a tweak in terms of a different color LED, because one of them became slightly more efficient than getting that through a phosphor coating. So there's always little tweaks and challenges and changes like that. As we keep getting better at extracting heat from the LEDs, we can make more and more compact fixtures, which we feel is very important, especially if you're using supplemental light in a greenhouse. You don't want a big fixture that's creating a big shadow up in the above the canopy of the plants. You want to have the smallest shadow possible with the most light coming out of that light fixture as possible.
Mm, right.
So we can keep shrinking the light fixture, getting more light intensity out of it, more efficiency. I'd love to see, I mean, our spectrum is specifically designed for maximizing flower and fruit production. There's other spectrums. NASA's actually been doing work with what spectrum works best for maximizing lettuce production, because they're trying to grow lettuce up on the International Space Station.
Wow.
So they figured out that, you know, 90% red light and 10% blue seems to do it for maximizing production on lettuce. But I think they're missing out on the fact that if they threw some UV light in there, it would actually increase the nutrient content of their lettuce and make it healthier for people to eat up there.
Ooh,
so there's
I like that.
There's a whole bunch of research in not just cannabis, but every crop is going to be slightly different in terms of what you're looking to maximize out of it and for what purpose you're growing it. Because if you don't need to maximize terpene production, or you don't need to maximize vitamin or anthocyanin production, then you don't need UV light. But for microgreens and lettuce, if you want it to be colorful and you want it to be more nutritious, ultraviolet light is very good. And right now, ultraviolet LEDs are not getting as much research funding as a lot of the other colors are, a lot of the visible colors are. So they're a little bit lagging behind. They need to be babied right now in our light fixtures. A lot of our fixture design is around keeping the UV LEDs that we've got in there happy, so that they will keep running for the expected lifetime of the light.
Wow. So you're hoping for more research, more exploration into that field of UV light.
Yep, absolutely.
What about UVB light? And really quickly, before we sign off here, what about the lights that are possibly harmful to humans? How does that work, balancing that?
So that's why, one of the reasons why we don't include UVB light in our fixtures. There was a study done in 1986 that the U.S. government somehow, in 1986, funded a study on cannabis plants to look at how ultraviolet light affected trichome development as well as THC and CBD levels.
Oh.
And I'm considering you can't get money from the U.S. government to do research on cannabis now. How they did it in 1986 is beyond.
Yeah, seriously.
But back in 1986, spectroradiometers that can actually measure the spectrum and the relative intensity of every wavelength in that spectrum were $250,000 devices. They weren't things that were loaned to people to put in a greenhouse. So they had to make some guesses as to what they were actually testing. And they used a broad spectrum light source, and they put filters under it, material that was supposed to filter out various different wavelengths of light so they could test stuff out. And their test using this broad spectrum light with filters under it ended up showing that ultraviolet B, UVB light, is what really triggers the plants to create the maximum THC and CBD and the most trichome production. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they didn't realize, because they couldn't measure it directly, that one of the filters they were using, the one that was supposed to block UVA light, does not block UVA light. So the only thing they actually were able to tell is that UVB and UVA light together increase trichome production.
Wow.
CBD. There's this misconception, because it was published 30 years ago and people didn't realize that their filter was wrong. So even though their study came to the conclusion that it's only UVB light, it's actually the case that UVA and UVB light both have this same effect in cannabis. We can get the increase with UVA alone, which is not as harmful to humans. It doesn't have enough energy to actually cause cancer. So we include only UVA light and leave out the UVB, because UVB light actually has enough energy that it can break the bonds in DNA, split DNA, and that's when you start getting mutations that can lead to things like cancer, and it also harms the plants.
Jeez. Man, you are just dropping science. Kevin, I've done this show for 4 years now. This is one of my favorite episodes, man. I got to be honest. This was super, super enlightening, and you are a very knowledgeable and also a very good teacher. You're a knowledgeable individual, and you're good at expressing your knowledge as well.
Well, I'm glad to be able to help out. I'm actually very passionate about what I do, and yeah, I'm just a giant nerd at heart. So
love it, man. We love nerds on this show. BlackDogLED.com. That's the URL, correct?
Yes.
BlackDogLED.com. Everybody, listen, these are the high-end LED lights. Go and get one. If you've been thinking about trying one, listen to Kevin, man. How could you not get one at the end of the show? This guy knows his stuff. Kevin, thank you so much for doing this, man. Seriously, it really was a pleasure.
Well, it was wonderful talking with you.
All right, everybody. Listen, we're signing off here. At Growcast on Instagram, give me a follow. Or that's the show, actually. Give me a follow at Jordan River IG on Instagram. You can get at me personally there. MyGrowPass.com for the membership program. Everything we got going on there. Loving the membership program. This is Kevin from Black Dog LEDs and Jordan River signing off, wishing you the best of luck in your grow this week and beyond. Thank you all so much for listening, everybody. Be safe out there and grow smarter. Okay, everyone, that's our show today. What an exciting show. I hope you learned a lot. What do we got at the end here? Check out our merch page, growcastpodcast.com. Click on merch. Shout out to Start to Finish, Start2Finish710 on Instagram. That's the number 2. For all your consultation needs, check him out. And special thanks to Jay Blanked on this beat for the ad music. Find him at Jay Blanked on all sorts of SoundCloud, all the platforms for music. You'll find him. Jay Blanked, everybody. And what do we got coming up here? We've got a good CBD episode coming. We got more lighting talk with the guy from MyGrow. It's a really, really great month coming your way. So thank you all for listening. Happy growing to all of you. Bye-bye now.